Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentations, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question at that time, you may press star one. This conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Rob Ahuja. Sir, you may begin.
Hello, and welcome, everyone. This is your host, Rob Ahuja. And today we have a very exciting topic for our DB2 chat with the lab. The topic is DB2 PureScale, always-on elastic database cluster. There's two ways you can join into this conference. You can join the webcast and listen to the live audio. Alternatively, you can log into the teleconference and download the PDF charts from ibm.com/db2/labchats. That's LABCHATS. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Sal Vella, Vice President of Database Development at IBM. Over to you, Sal.
I'm very happy to be hosting this DB2 chat with the labs. I want to thank everyone for joining us on this call. I also want to acknowledge the work of IDUG, the International DB2 Users Group, in getting the word out for this call. As the world becomes more interconnected and global integration becomes norm, businesses need more than ever to find new ways to connect internally and externally. Global integration also means that the human ecosystem, which companies need to leverage, extends well beyond the payroll to partners, suppliers, and customers. Customers expect this. They demand higher levels of service than ever before. Meeting these needs requires smarter systems that are intentionally designed to overcome a consistent set of workload challenges. Companies and governments need to be able to analyze and extract intelligence from information, irrespective of where the data lies, and in real time, without being bound by a particular system or platform. Clients have obtained a lot of value from the investments they've made in the past, but they still don't feel they have enough visibility into changing conditions within their company and within the markets that they serve. Also, as the capabilities of digital devices soar, prices plummet. Sensors and gadgets are digitizing vast amounts of information that was previously unavailable. Enterprise data growth over the next 5 years is estimated to be 650%, with 80% of this data being unstructured from a variety of sources such as blogs, web content, email, and so on. Smarter systems are workload optimized to deliver better performance at lower costs. As part of our $6 billion a year R&D investment in workload optimized systems, we've announced a line of optimized systems to enable clients to handle analytic and transactional workloads many times faster for industries such as financial markets, smart power grids, healthcare, and telecommunications. Now, these smart systems are fully integrated, pre-tested software and hardware to deliver high availability, higher performance, and lower costs. Now, we've announced the IBM PureScale application system with Power 7 technology and smart analytics systems for power systems, x86, and mainframe environments. Each is integrated at every level, from microprocessors to hardware and software, highly tuned for analyzing enormous amounts of data and real-time handling data-intensive transactions. For example, today's stock exchanges need to easily conduct tens of thousands of stock trades per second, completing each in microseconds with extreme accuracy. These exchanges must have the ability to handle unanticipated trading volumes due to economic ripples such as the reporting of a company's financial performance or changing of government policies. The new IBM PureScale application system combines Power 7-based servers with WebSphere application server and DB2 PureScale software to handle heavy transactional workloads such as smart utility grids. I tell clients that I don't want them being systems integrators. I don't want you being systems integrators. We've done the work to integrate hardware, software, and services. If you're looking to build a highly available, highly scalable transactional system, then have a look at the PureScale application system. If you're looking to build a scalable analytics system, then have a look at our smart analytics systems. You focus on the business problem you need to solve, and let us focus on the plumbing to help to get you there. Now, over the past month, we've made a number of very significant announcements in our product portfolio. In July, we announced support for our PureScale technology on System X hardware. Now, previously, we had support for System P and AIX. With this announcement, we've made extensive support for PureScale to System X commodity hardware, We've had huge interest amongst our whole customer set for PureScale, and the Linux announcement will further expand the range of customers. The technology is now available, actually available as of last Friday. Low entry price, but the same outstanding availability and scalability without having to change your application. Several weeks ago, we also announced a new world record TPCC benchmark results. TPCC is the industry standard benchmark for OLTP workloads. Now, we crushed the previous mark with a first-ever result of over 10 million transactions per minute. And this was done with P7-780 hardware and DB29.7. The precise number was 10.36 million transactions per minute. Now, in terms of comparisons with the Oracle Sun results, this result is 2.7 times faster per core than the best Oracle Sun results. The cost is 41% lower than the best Oracle Sun results, and it uses 35% less energy per transaction. Now, this is the mantra we have about performance. Better performance means you can do more with the hardware you have, or you can use fewer cores, both hardware and software licenses. Now, we also announced a successor to the Smart Analytics System, the 7600. We call this the Smart Analytics System 7700. This is a P7-based smart analytics system. It has four times more cores, twice the performance, three times capacity, four times less power consumption, three times less physical space, and five times the I.O. per second, all at, in terms of cost, half the cost per terabyte as the previous generation. This is an outstanding system with great characteristics for data warehousing workloads. This system is available now. Now on to this chat with the lab. Last year, we released DB2 PureScale technology, an integrated database cluster solution that provides continuous data availability, virtually unlimited capacity, elastic scalability, all this with easy setup and management, but without requiring any application changes. As of last week, we've recently updated DB2 PureScale, announced that it will now be available to run on Intel-based commodity hardware and Linux. This webcast will cover various DB2 PureScale-related topics, including architecture, benefits. We'll show you some demos, share some customer experiences, and talk about how to get started, including the ability to get POCs and demos. The presenter for today's chat with the lab is Drew Bradstock. Drew is a senior product manager for DB2 and spends much of his time with clients and business partners to help direct the development efforts. Many thanks again, and enjoy the presentation.
Thank you very much, Sal. So this is Drew Bradstock. A couple of quick things to cover before we get started. The volume should be better now. We had some issues with Sal's line, so I think I should be a little bit louder than Sal, I hope. I definitely don't have a quiet voice. Also, the slides right now, we're going to start getting the presentation. Sal just wanted to give an intro, and thank you very much, Sal, for giving us the introduction to PureScale. What we're going to be covering today is a couple of things. One, why people are looking at PureScale. Two, how customers are actually using it. And three, and really interwoven into everything, is how it actually works. The nuts and bolts underneath the covers, so you understand what's going to work for you, what isn't, and some of the caveats and catches. So I know there was a great previous Chat of the Labs organized by Rav Ahuja, and Rav, thank you for continuing to organize these calls and working with iDug as well to get the great attendance we're seeing right now. But we'll be weaving in how this works. But take a look and listen into the old chat with the labs, which was hosted, I believe, by Matt Huris. On PureScale, there's a lot of great information there as well. So that will complement what I'm covering today. Definitely encourage questions. So I'm going to pause and be able to answer questions as we go. We'll have an open Q&A at the end of the call. So I'm going to chat for about 45 minutes. Then we'll open it up to you, because part of the big value of this is it is a chat with the labs. It's not the lab chatting at you. It's you, as the community, telling us what you think, asking questions, and I'm here to help you out. So with that, I'm going to move to the next slide so you're not all staring at the same screen right now, and we'll get started. And I will pause for it. I won't be able to answer the questions right away, but I will be answering them in chunks as we go, just so we get a little bit of flow. I'll pause, answer some questions, and then continue on. So once again, it's summertime, so thank you all of you for making the time either to listen in later or to be on the call right now. So what we're seeing with a lot of our customers is that small databases that we all used to manage, and I came from the DB2 performance tuning group on the ISV side, so I did this work for years, is a lot of systems start small, but as companies get acquired or acquire other firms, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. So a lot of these small systems are suddenly global in nature. You need 24/7 availability, or they've outgrown the initial servers. Second thing, and this is the biggest challenge for DBAs out there, downtime is not acceptable, right? So one of the key things that DBAs are forced to deal with is a system that used to have a batch window can't anymore, right? You can't say I'm down Sunday from midnight to 5 a.m. because midnight East Coast time is 9 p.m. Saturday, and I recently had a baby, or my wife did, a number of months back, and one of the vendors had a batch window, so on Saturday night when we were figuring our baby registry, we couldn't do anything other than read from it, so we went to the other vendor who actually had the system live. And that's a big change. Before, we were lucky enough to have those outage windows. Now you can't. And that's a planned outage. I'm not even talking about a live trading day disruption or on the United States Black Friday, which is actually a huge shopping day around U.S. Thanksgiving. If your systems go down then, people's jobs get lost, businesses go under, because a lot of the sales are in a short period of time. So DBAs are being forced at a decent cost and ease of use to have a very good HA solution. Next slide, we're on slide 3 for those of you listening in and going through the charts. So the other big thing, and this is a nightmare for DBAs, is it used to have a planning cycle, right? 6 months in advance, here's the projects that are coming, here's how we can alter the database, right? Here's when we're going to need additional capacity. Now they're saying, oh, by the way, the new iPhone launched and the antenna works on this. So even though we've given you no notice, Mr. DBA and people run the app servers and sysadmin, I need to have 4 times the capacity this Friday because if we don't, we're going to lose business and we're going to have to fire people. Like, it's gotten really, really stressful to respond quick with this. The businesses that can, they're doing quite well. The ones that can't are disappearing, and a lot of this is coming down in IT. And the final big challenge we have right now is making changes to applications are expensive. Right, having a workload that's tuned, and I got to admit, Rack's a pretty good system, right? And a number of you have already seen some posts on the fact that you do have Oracle Rack. It does a good job at the small end, but try expanding it out. Try deciding that on Tuesday for 3 days, because of the holidays, you need 4 times the servers, right? You need 3 additional servers mixed in. A lot of the Rack environments will break down, right? You can't easily add capacity to a lot of performance tuning, and really, we need to be able to respond quickly, either with dynamic outpowering or VMware, or VMware images, or being able to add additional servers with PureScale, you can't have a 6-month planning window. It's shorter and shorter, and developers don't design for scaling in mind. We wish. They barely designed for decent SQL. You're not going to get them designing for database performance. So what are we talking about today? On slide 4, a number of you will be new to PureScale. This is new database clustering technology from DB2 for Linux, Unix, and Windows. In this case, it's just power, so AIX, and Linux on System X. So it's not Sun or HP or Windows right now. We're concentrating on making sure it runs well on power and on Linux on System X. Main reason why it's very interesting to a lot of the people I've chatted with this year is you can add capacity really easily, right? On top of that, you can buy it per day. And we'll walk through it a little bit in terms of how cost-effective it is to add servers and also how easy it is to do. Big one for all of us who actually have to deal with this. And one thing, actually, I'm going to pause for a second. Juan had asked a question, is there audio available with Same Time Unite? There should be right now. You should be able to hear the audio through it. The audio cast is running. I'm going to pause for a second, and I am going to log back in. So if everyone can bear with me, just because it appears the Same Time audio is not working. So hold on 1 second, everyone. And we thought we had it working, so give me 1 second. I'm going to dial back in again. Hold on. Try. AudioCast works. Ralph is saying it works. Okay, so I think it's just a problem. Okay, I'm not going to go in once. You may want to check your speakers. It appears others are working on it. So perfect. Okay, I'm glad I didn't hang up on all of you. So we'll go back to the charts. We're on chart 4. And Juan, you can log into the teleconference number if you want to listen to it if you can't get the speakers going. There is an 800 number that should work from wherever you are. So application transparency, the best thing about this is see how we've got 4 servers in this little diagram. From a DBA point of view or an app server point of view, right, all the layers above that database, doesn't care. Right? It doesn't matter about where the data sits. It's all on shared disk. You don't need to retune your app server. You don't need to worry about workload balancing. It's all taken care of through DB2. And finally, it's continuous availability. So if you lose three of those four servers, you're still good to go, right? That's the whole point of PureScale. It's not just scaling, it's making sure a system doesn't go down. From simple two-server systems all the way up to the, we've got the scaling up to 128, you can just keep on failing those servers and DB2 is going to stay up. So next slide. Okay, so what is PureScale? Where's the nuts and bolts here? So at the very top, I'm going to work from the top and the way down. Regular DB2 client. It's a 9.7 client, right? So you can use the clients against DB2 9.7, 9.5, and earlier, as well as PureScale. Nice thing is, it's all automatic workload balancing. So within that client already is the code, right? And there's a certain fixed pack level. As we increase the fixed packs on DB2 9.7, it's all included. What happens is, the client will actually get information set back up through the SQL CA, and so you don't even need to worry about this. It occasionally checks how many servers are in the cluster and what's the workload on each. It's not just CPU, it's a number of factors. So we've got a secret sauce there that figures out how heavily utilized are they and does the workload balancing. So the app server layer, all it sees is a DB2 client, right? Connecting to a DB2 database isn't different from anything else. So you would want to, actually a question from Tim, you can also use technology rollout upgrade to portions of your infrastructure. Yeah, so we would want to keep it on a standard client, right? So you don't need to have something special for PureScale. But the nice thing about it is there's two ways you can do the workload balancing. At the connection level, so you basically check to see a connection time, which server is the busiest, and you stay on it, right? Which is good for some apps, but it's also at the transaction level. This is key because most applications these days, especially important ones, use connection pooling, right? So you don't really ever release a connection. You've got a pool of them. So what it can do is at the transaction level, it'll check, but it doesn't route the clients all over the place. Only does it if there's a significant difference between the balance levels on the different servers. So if it's 1 or 2 percentage points different, the workload is going to stay where it is. If there's a 20 to 30%, I think it's even down to 5%, it'll actually move over to the other server. Great thing about this is, user doesn't know, app server doesn't know, you don't even need to know. It actually can just move between them. So second part of this, it is a cluster of database servers. And what you have in this diagram here is three data servers, and these could be LPARs, it could be individual X servers, however you want to set it up, and then one or two additional PowerHA PureScale servers. So part of it is the core DB2 part of the cluster, and the other part is actually the clustering technology. So that can run an LPAR or a standalone server. So the way we have it set up in this diagram is actually 3 + 2 servers, but this can be compressed down to just two servers, where that PowerHA, PureScale technology, if you're from the Z-land, you're used to as a coupling facility, what will actually happen is they can run on the same server. So the clustering technology will be on two separate servers, and you have one data server on each. So it can go right down to two, and this is both on Linux and on Power. Now, this does all run on InfiniBand, and that's very important. I'll get into why in a few minutes. But we do just support InfiniBand. We're looking at adding 10 gig E for Linux in particular within the fall. So you'll be able to have 10 gig Ethernet for this as well, and it all points to a shared data, so common IBM storage. Our Smart Analytics System, or DPF, the BI technology is separate from this. It runs on shared nothing, so individual chunks of data for each server. This is different. It is shared data, so they all connect to one. And the terminology we'll use is members. When we're talking about the data, over the next 10, 15 minutes, we'll be talking about it just being on individual members. Okay, so next slide. And I'll come back to the questions in just a few minutes. Oh, actually, a good question from Pauline. So Pauline asks, must you always have PowerHA serve in the cluster, or can you run exclusively on X? So number one thing, I'm going to go back quickly. This is my bad. I should really know better. We've got a naming technology for that clustering facility. We've got an X name for it, too. It's the same code, right? So if you run it on Power, it's entirely on Power. If you run it on X, it's entirely on Linux on X. So no crossover there. We'll also talk about some of the upgrade issues. Before I move on, a question from Tim. Is there affinity to where a transaction SQL invocation will land across the landscape? Right now, there's two ways to do it. So you can have it where it goes randomly to any of them, right? In DB2, the client will decide, or you can specifically say, I want to go to server 3 or server 2. So if you want specific applications only be on one server, That's fine, but the way we've built this technology, you don't need to worry about the affinity, unlike RAC, where the data affinity does have a big impact, especially as you get to larger clusters. So one of the big things, great question from Darren. Darren asked, well, is it only IBM storage? Right, a lot of good questions, so this is really good. It's any storage. There's specific requirements for failover. We use something called SCSI 3PR, which allows very quickly to isolate a server from the cluster if it's down or we think it's down. But we support all storage that supports this protocol. And I think within Matt's chat with the lab, they go into details. And off channel DB2, there's additional information on PureScale, same with the website on this. We have links at the end. But it's any DB2 storage, storage, IBM or otherwise, that supports this. So I'm going to move on, and we'll come back to the questions in a little bit. So good questions so far, so keep them coming. So what we're looking at here, and the big reason why this has attracted a lot of people, is flexible licensing. So the way this is licensed, and it's always good as a DBA to know, because you want to know where the IT budget's going, right? You don't want it to all go to software, because then there's not much money in there for salaries. You only pay for where DB2 is actually running. So if we go back quickly and take a look at this, you see three servers or three LPARs running DB2. So DB2 ESC is effectively running on these three members. And I'm going to try the pointer. Let's see if this works properly. So these three servers are running it. The two LPARs are servers running the PowerHA, so the clustering technology, no license cost. We only charge where ESC is running. So if you've got a very heavy read-write ratio that may require some more horsepower for the clustering, we're not going to charge you for that licensing. It's only where DB2 is actually running, which makes it easy for once to keep track of what the charges are. It's not a convoluted mess. It's quite easy to understand here. So I'm going to go on the next slide. So it does make it easy to license there. Now, the thing is as well is you can have where you only pay for capacity when you use it. A lot of customers are looking at rolling this out now, may have a cluster that's two or three servers. Now, what they can do is add another server, right, put one more server on there of another DB2 member, and you could pay by the day if you wanted to. So you could actually say, turn that server on for 3 days, right, run DB2, and then only pay the software licenses for a couple days. This is great. Like, retail is a good example of this, right? If you've got a peak period, Thanksgiving, right, or in Canada, we've got Boxing Day the day after Christmas is just a retail bonanza up here. You could have additional capacity just for that one day, single command to add it, right, with starting the member up, single command to remove it, and then only pay by the day. So rather than having a server sit there idle all year, costing you money, you could just add it the day before and roll it the day after or have it running for a couple of events or a couple of days. And that saves you a lot of money. So if you wanted to add it, and we'll walk through this in a little more detail, it is actually quite simple. There's some really good videos on channel DB2 on how simple the install is, and I'll walk you through a little bit of it, and also how to add additional capacity. So definitely check out the channel DB2 site. Look for some videos on PureScale. We put a lot of work to making this easy. We learned from the pains we've had with HADR and all the work we've done with the Tivoli system automation team. We really tried to hide everything from DBAs, so you can just concentrate as being a database administrator and not have to worry about a dozen other pieces of technology. So good question from Greg that I'm going to touch on. Right now, HADR does not work with PureScale, right? So this is, we'll get into some of the DR technology you have. But so HADR is read-only is separate from PureScale. We're looking at doing something with the integrated DR in the future. But right now, HADR doesn't read it or doesn't work with it. So Karen also asked, do PowerHA LPARs need to run in the same frame? Nope, they can be completely separate. Right, a lot of what customers are doing is they're actually taking two frames, one PowerHA on each, and what we do is we automatically duplicate from one PowerHA to the other one, so it's very quick, so if one server dies, you still keep up, and then you have one member on each, and then you just add additional frames, additional members. The reason they're doing this is it's HA technology. If you had the space on it for additional member, you'd really just add the LPARs or add the additional cores using dynamic LPARing. So another question from Karen, can this be a geo cluster? Not right now. So Sysflex, actually on the Z side, this is where we've got it from. We work heavily with the Z folks to try and bring Sysflex from a hardware appliance over to the software side. Sysflex can do some pretty neat stuff around geo clustering, yeah, we don't have that yet. I wish we did. We're taking a look at it, but right now it's local or as far as InfiniBand can go. So it's all local within a site. I think InfiniBand, we've been doing some work in terms of how far we can stretch it, but it's pretty much local at this. Pure XML does work 100%, right? Coming in Q4. So it doesn't right now, but we're adding in Q4 as a fix pack. And Phil Gunning asked a really good question. I'm sure someone fed him some information with this one. Will plan to support Workgroup? Look back to the IBM webpage on October 5th, and you'll see some pretty neat announcements in this space, some really neat announcements. So for those of you who mark your calendars, check the IBM webpage. Good reason to go check the PureScale page. Well, some pretty cool announcements around PureScale and Workgroup and what you can do with it. So I legally can't say anything yet, Phil, but take a look, and I think you'll be extremely happy about what we're doing around the Workgroup space. So I'm going to keep on going. So next slide, you can just keep on adding servers. That's the main thing. We've done testing this up to 128. Now, second part of this is application transparency. As I covered earlier, you don't need to worry about data affinity, right? You can just have it connect anywhere. It's not like RAC where you got to tune and have the data in certain members. You can put it anywhere. The global locking and global buffer pool management and the PowerHA servers takes care of all that. So add capacity, no need to retune. And it doesn't all have to be the same server. Let's say you just need a little bit of a boost. You can add an additional 4 cores as another server. It doesn't all have to be identical. So just add capacity as you need it. In this example, we just keep on adding it. And to the users, they don't know. Obviously, DBAs are well aware of where the software is running, but they can easily add it with a single command. And it's actually that simple. Like, I know normally people roll their eyes at this. They go, single command, we've heard that one before, right? But it's gotten to the point where we do a lot of live demos. When I speak about this, I'd much prefer to do it live so the customers believe me and see what's going on, and it's that simple. We've had a couple of the Canadian banks up here sit there and add and remove servers as they go and just keep on killing it and watching it come back, and we let them do it live as we present. So it's pretty neat, and I highly encourage anyone interested in this to follow up and try and sign up for a beta. We'd love to work with you to show you what PureScale can do. So I'm going to pause for a second. A couple questions here. Is the technology supported by SAP? We're working heavily with them, and look to that same PureScale webpage for an update when it's officially supported. Work with your SAP rep, but it should be coming soon, and the official support statement will come from SAP. They've been a great partner of ours for a long time, and they feel this technology will really help their SAP customers. So Victor, to question, do the members need to be on the same OS? So they do. It has to be AIX or Linux. You can have differences because you can roll a server in, put an OS upgrade or security patch, roll it out, right? And you can do rolling upgrades using this technology for the OS, but it has to be in the same major OS level. So you couldn't have AIX 6 and AIX 7. It does have to be constant across major levels. And it can't be a mix of Linux and AIX. So Paul Van Hoon asked about the PureScale appliance, and I'll come back to that. So Dave, as well as Linux, ping me a little bit later in the presentation up on that chat window, and we'll deal with Linux. I'll get to it a little bit later. So I'm going to move on, and we'll come back to these questions. So great ones. Keep them up, and we'll keep on going. Siebel, we're dealing with Oracle. That's a little bit of a challenge with them learning Siebel, but we're definitely willing to work with Oracle anytime to get it certified. So we're looking at chart 11 for those of you following along in the PDFs. Best thing about this entire thing, and to be honest, I was pretty shocked when I saw the initial install demos, and this is going back a year and a half ago, it's a single install for everything. Everything you need to know, from the clustered file system, so GPFS, to the work with Tivoli System Automation, to the new code, you name it, single install. Other thing is once you install it on one server, as part of that GUI install, and for once, I'm a big command line guy, but I did like the GUI, it'll push it out to every other server you specify in the cluster. So the additional screens to go from a regular DB2 install to a PureScale install is 2, right? So the amount of time it takes you to install DB2 itself, add another, say, 30 seconds of actual typing in, you specify the host names, right, in a physical volume for a tiebreaker, and that's it. It takes a little while because it actually pushes out the code to all the other servers and does in parallel. Actually, I think this one's still serial. Pushes out to the other servers and installs it. I highly recommend take a look at Channel DB2, and you can download the install video. The only thing we changed in the install video is the amount of time at the end. So rather than have you stare at a screen for 10 minutes as did the install, We use the magic of editing to flip over to the complete install, but everything else is real-time, which is key. So check out this one, and it works well. The other one as well is the fix packs, and a good question from Gopal, is the fix packs include everything too. So you can put the fix packs on PureScale, push it out, all the components are updated all at once, so you don't have to rebuild any other software or security patches or anything other than DB2. Our monitoring is integrated into Optum Performance Manager, so it's all there. Single install for fix packs and updates. Right now, the fix packs are not live, so unfortunately we don't have rolling upgrades for fix pack installs. That is coming in a future release. Right, so we know it's a big requirement for a lot of you, and we're adding that, but it's not there yet. You can do OS-level rolling upgrades, but not fix packs yet. Now, it's pretty simple to add members. Like, I mean, this is a proof in the pudding, so take a look at the beta. It's down to one command to do the install if you want to add, say, another server, single command to remove it, and if you want to start the member and stop it, it's a DB2 start command. It's actually that simple. I do a lot of live demos of this, and it's DB2 start, and you're up and going. So it does make a big difference here. Very specific question from Anil. Good question, Anil. How do app devs mention their Java C# connection string to point to a particular server? What you actually do is rather than pointing to the PureScale cluster, you'd catalog the database you're trying to connect to. So you could catalog that specific server and port rather than the generic one using like a virtual IP. So rather than point to one that refers to the entire cluster, you'd simply specify almost cataloging that one particular member as its own database. And that's how you'd point to it directly. So good question from Tom as well. Have you heard any issues where PureScale has affected the server storage teams? They've actually been pretty good about it. The server teams have been cool because it's easy and they don't care. It's a database, right? So, I mean, if you can cut an LPAR, they haven't been that worried. Storage, they want to know specifically what protocols they need and if it's supported, and said, is it IBM only? And we said, no, EMC and others are supported. Obviously, we work with SVG to make sure it runs well, but I haven't seen much pushback at all. Having said that, I'm sure something will end up in my email within the next 20 minutes, but it hasn't been much problems. Next slide. Apologize if I missed a few questions. Just got a lot to go through today, so we'll come back. Gopal asks, is it cluster-based shared disk? Yep, 100%. So from a continuous availability point of view, workload balancing is taken care of, right? So that's all handled. The lock manager and memory manager, those PowerHA servers in the far right on slide 12, they're all duplex. So if one dies, your cluster remains up. If both your global lock and memory management servers die, then you're in trouble. It's just like a database crash, right? So if both of them die, that's why you want them on separate frames. I think Karen mentioned that. You have to have them on separate frames because you don't want the single frame to die. TSA actually handles all the failover, all the different components. And this is hidden from you. You don't even need to know TSA is there. All the policy work's done, all the integration work. So we did a lot of work with Tivoli to make sure it's all hidden. Similar to what we have with HEDR now, with the current fix pack of DB2, not what we had back in version 8 or 8.2. Those of you who dealt with some of the hurdles we had, my apologies. But take a look at how much it's hidden now, and that's what we've got to. So if you lose, let's say in this diagram here, I lose two of those members in one of the PowerHA servers, system's still up, right? It's a little slower because you've got a third the capacity, but it's still going on. The only part we don't have integrated for the failover is that shared disk, right? So you need to use disk replication to take care of it, similar to Oracle Rack. They don't have that taken care of either. Now, crash recovery is automatic, right? You can either do a controlled takedown or you can do something where it's a crash, which is normally the way it is. Let's say server 3 in this diagram, so the one in the far right dies. What would happen if that one dies? DB2 using TSA will keep on checking to see when it comes up. As soon as it comes up, if the server is dead, right? Once that server reboots, it'll restart DB2, and DB2 will actually speak to the rest of the cluster and try and get back in and get reintegrated. Workload balancing kicks in, redistributes once the server is there. If let's say it's a DB2 failure, so DB2 just crashes and the server is up, it'll restart DB2 and once again reintegrate it. DBAs don't need to do a thing. As soon as that server is back up, from planned or unplanned outages, it'll reactivate itself, reintegrate itself in the client, and let the workload management know, or workload balancing know that it's back in the cluster. So, next slide. So, a question from John McVicker, a good one. You mentioned DB2 crashing. How often does that happen? So, software is not perfect, right? Things can go down, right? That's why you have failover ones. It's pretty rare. But if something really, really odd happens, DB2 can crash. We've all gone through PMRs, just like Oracle or SQL Server. Things do happen, but what we're concentrating on here is the overall server's dying or an OS crash or a memory corruption or something like that. We have to recover, but it is designed to handle DB2 itself crashing as well, right? So any issues come up in software, so we want to cover that. In our demos, we crash DB2 on purpose. We actually kill the DB2 SYSC process with a kill minus 9 to simulate DB2 crashing. So it's not that we found a bug we can crash on demand. It is using a kill minus 9. So what? I'll come back to some of them as well. Sorry, guys. I just got a lot to get through. So DB2 for ZOS, we work heavily with these guys. Sysplex is the gold standard for this, right? For those of you who work with it and have Sysplex running well, you can't beat it for availability. You just can't, right? It's the best thing out there. We get a great quote from Larry that I save forever, right, where he's saying it's a first-rate piece of technology. Then it is, right? And why? It's a coupling facility. So rather than having that lock and memory management spread across all the servers, which is great if you've got a very small cluster but lousy if you start scaling out, we centralize all our locking and memory management into that Power HA. So it's centralized no matter how many servers you scale out. It does it very, very well. And we learned a lot. Right, from ZOS, so rather than starting from scratch, we leverage what people know and what they love and work with that. And I'm going to walk through what makes us different as well and why it's so efficient, because there's always magic, and magic needs an explanation, otherwise it's marketing and PowerPoint. So what we're looking at and why this makes a difference, right, and this is for both X and Power to be clear, is RDMA. So it's remote direct memory access. The issue is, right, TCP/IP is really expensive. So the more network traffic you have going back with messaging, and this counts for data partitioning or Teradata or whoever, any clustering technologies, processing TCP/IP is really expensive, right? CPU intensive, involves a lot of work. We don't think about it, but when you get to that level, it does. What will happen is, as you add more servers, that CPU goes up and up and up. So as you add more servers, the majority of your workload is actually for the clustering, not for any additional data processing. It's doing all that, the TCP/IP routing. So you're wasting money, you're wasting server capacity. So we've actually seen clusters from other vendors get worse as you get beyond about 4 or 5, where the capacity goes down and you barely add anything because of all the overhead. So what RDMA does, it actually can communicate, it'll write memory directly from one member of the cluster to the other, but directly to the memory space. So it's like a direct dial. So you don't even go through the routing software. You can say, hey, I'm going to route from block A on from member 1 to block A on the global buffer pool, and it directly changes the bits. So you don't have all that extra overhead. It actually is a protocol. There's no socket calls, no interrupts, no context switching, which when you've got a large cluster, a whole bunch of Linux blades or Power blades or just a big cluster, that can be a big overhead. So because of RDMA, it does it very, very quickly, right, and at a very, very low cost. And we've optimized for it. We're new, so we're able to take advantage of the latest and greatest. And that's why it's InfiniBand to start. And that's why even when we have Gig E or 10 Gig E, we're actually doing RDMA over 10 Gig E, right? So this isn't designed for anything other than that. We do have something neat coming out in the fall that does it not with RDMA, but that's designed for very small clusters. And you'll hear more about that on October 5th as well. And look out for the microclusters. They're pretty cool. But the Gig E and the InfiniBand, it uses RDMA, so it's very, very quick, right? And this really did make the difference. So we get near linear scaling. There's no perfect linear scaling, right? Like I said, anyone claims perfect scalability is a magician. The magicians aren't real. So, but this gets very, very good scaling. And also, with the failovers, we're not having, if one dies, we don't need to block I.O. from all the others. Because it's centralized, if memory 3 dies, we're not having to rebuild the whole lock and memory list to recover or lock up all the data, which means if a server dies, we keep on trucking. Right? The only data that's locked is the data recovering from the rollback for particular transactions in flight. Because it's shared disk, all the logs sit in the shared disk as well. So and you can even recover the logs keep on getting processed even as member 3 dies, right, for whatever reason. Half time power outage, to be honest. Power plug or a huge disk failure or something like that. But it keeps on going, and it recovers very quickly at memory speeds versus having to read right back and forth. So this is the secret sauce, and it's something you don't need to worry about, but it's good to know where it's actually, why it's able to recover. So Victor Ramirez asked a good question. Specific InfiniBand standard required. We do have specific adapters and switches we use. We're working with a lot of vendors to expand that, but for now it's a little limited because they're the ones that we partnered with. But they're the major vendors. So if you take a look at the PureSchool website, it can go into detail. So here's really what it comes down to. We're writing directly from agent to agent, from member to member, and you can also write directly in the global buffer pool, right? So it's very, very quick to be able to figure out, well, do I have the data, right? And if I don't, how do I pull it back very quickly? So this is how we get that non-requirement for locality of data, which is sort of bedeviled a lot of the other vendors. We're very efficient using RDMA to get right in, right? And some of the other vendors, because they've designed over a long period of time and use TCP/IP heavily, they may support RDMA, but they're not optimized for it. And that's the difference. We can pull this very quickly. So even if the data is all over the place and it's scattered like a real OLTP or SAP workload, it can go from there. So good question on the global buffer pool size of some of all the buffer pools in the database. It's pretty close. There's a couple of different rules of thumb. It doesn't have to be the sum of all of them, because picture if you've got a cluster with a huge amount, right, across all of them, you want it greater than the size of the largest one, right? You want to be able to have all the data in there, but we've got it optimized to be able to, if it's full, to be able to push back, right? So that PowerHA server is going to be a memory pig in a good way, right? The memory is a lot cheaper both on X and Power than it was back in the day, but you want a lot of memory on those boxes more than CPU, which is why a lot of people are just using them as LPARs, right? They're cutting the LPAR than Power, or even having it local on System X, but giving a lot of memory to that space. Gopal, one final question on workload balancing. Is it automatic? It is. We don't have it controlled right now. We're looking for that for the future. But right now, most people just want it to run and balance evenly, nothing else. So what's the server actually making up for PowerHA, right? And this applies to Power and X. So we did look at System Z, so the parallel suspects and coupling facility. For those of you with the Z background, right now there's a lot of you working in LEW, you're going to recognize these diagrams, right? I think we may have even lifted some of them from the old docs. But the big thing is provided is a global buffer pool, or a group buffer pool, sorry, global lock management, so it handles all that in a shared communication area. So if you look at member zero, those actual data pieces, you've got all your DB2 agents running, you've got your log buffers, just like a regular DB2. Now, if you skip down to the bottom, you see on that shared disk, the logs for each member is actually on the shared disk. This is so if one of the members dies, we can recover very quickly, and we're not hanging during that recovery. Because half the time, realistically, you lose a server, or you're bringing it down for maintenance. Either way, you can't get access to it. So you really do want to have this local. And Anil asked a good question on solid-state disks, right, for performance of disk I.O. We've done a huge amount of work with solid-state. We find it very, very good, especially for logs, which are often a bottleneck for big OLTP. So it's a great way to improve performance there, and we are looking at best practices around SSD. So Tom, I'm going through the questions to get caught up here, guys. Tom asks for Linux, do you foresee supporting VM for the CF? We actually do. VMware is actually one of my best partners out there. VMware and Intel and SAP are the cornerstone with DB2, right, outside of the IBM partners. We're working with them. They don't currently support InfiniBand, right, and that's the only reason we're not doing a big VMware partnership. It was just the lack of protocol support. We are doing work with them around what we can do with the 10 gig E. As soon as we can get RDMA support, we'll be working with VMware for sure. What we're actually doing for Linux is kind of neat. Because a lot of you will want to run a two-server Linux cluster, right? If you're not using Power and LPARs for Linux, you may not want to have separate servers for the PowerHA. So we can pin those cores. Picture one server where you've got, say, 8 cores, right? Just a single socket, octa-core, new Intel Nehalem server. You could say I've got 6 cores for DB2, and the DB2 will pin the other cores for the PowerHA. So you don't use any virtualization here. You can have the cores actually pinned, and we'd have DB2 pinned to 6 of those cores and the PowerHA pinned to 2. The advantage of that is you don't need virtualization, and then you're only paying for DB2 on those 6 cores, so it's a cost savings. The downside is, though, the workload's then pinned to it, right? So it can expand and grow. So if DB2 is slow and the PowerHA needs more, you're still stuck with those two. Once we work with VMware, look at what we're doing with KVM, then we can be a little more flexible. But right now, you could easily set up a two-server cluster just with the PowerHA pin to it. So from Javier, we had a question, does PureScale apply to DPF clusters? No. Very separate technology. I should have said this a little more clearly up front. DPF is designed for shared nothing, so individual disk attached to each server, designed for heavily parallelized BI queries, where you take one SQL and break it across many, many servers, right, so you can parallelize and have big BI run quickly. PureScale is a shared disk, and they're separate. So PureScale is designed for high-volume OLTP, and honestly, mixed workloads for reporting and OLTP, but for high-performance BI, we recommend DPF, right, an infrastructure warehouse. Gopal asks, does DB2 cluster manager need a root authority? Some of the commands do need root, and especially the ones where we're pushing out additional servers, you will need root because it's installing things and activating things. So there are a few additional commands or authority you need, but being able to get root temporarily or sudo is a big change from needing a team of 8 to be able to install a cluster. So there's trade-offs that we couldn't get around, but it's not that bad, right? So, for example, DB2 stop, right? You need root. I'm spoiled. I'm doing demos of root all the time. Being in the lab, I have root on everything I own, so I forget that in the real world, getting root's a big deal. But if you don't add a server all the time, so it's not that bad. Okay, I'm going to keep on moving on, guys, just so we can get through all the material. So it is all central, the buffer pool lock management and the shared communication area. It's automatically duplexed from the primary and secondary, right? So you don't need to know about the secondary, and you can fail back and forth between the two. So what's a member? What's it made up of? Really treat it like its own DB2 database. It's its own view of it, but it keeps in sync with everything else, right? So it is logical. You can have one per machine. You could have a machine like a server dedicated to a member or have it via an LPAR. We recommend LPARing. It's just easier, right? And that's realistically what we're seeing having it run. Each member is its own sysc process, right? So really think of the member as a standalone database with shared disk being kept in sync. And that's why, to the earlier question, you could actually specify which one you're going to connect to and create its own direct connection string rather than a virtual IP. So a lot of the terminology you see in the docs will refer to as data sharing for this, and that's really what it is, right? Rather than shared nothing, it is data sharing. They each have their own log files, buffer pools, memory regions. They don't all have to be the same. Member 0 could have 64 gigs of memory. Member 1 could have 32. They could have different number of cores. All that workload balancing is based upon overall usage, so it'll balance it out properly. They don't have to be the same. So does it support inter-partition parallelism? Yes, it does. So it definitely does. And on top of that, what's the average size of PureScale DB? Most of the OLTP databases are pretty small, right? We're finding that even the most important ones are under 50 gigs. PureScale ones we're looking at a little bigger because of the most critical ones, but they're under a terabyte. Just because customers are looking at getting it out on their not largest systems first, getting used to it, and then deploying it out. But they're looking heavily at this. And Power6AX virtualization supported, VIO is definitely supported. That's where we're using across Power. So range partitioning isn't available yet. It's coming in a future release on that one. So the actual range partitioning isn't there, but it will be coming soon. So each member, you can almost treat it like an instance, but it's not, right? It's one database. It's its own DB2 SYSC process, but it's one overall database with one instance owning everything, right? So next slide. We're on slide 18. So for the cluster interconnect, this is where you need RDMA, right, and InfiniBand, or Gigi later on. This is the connection between everything. And really what binds it together, but you can have regular Ethernet for the clients. It's only for the interconnect between the members and down into the clustering technology. Everything else is standard. So we actually use UDAPL to communicate as part of this, and this has been working directly with AIX and also on the Linux side. And the reason we're using these protocols is to reduce the CPU as much as possible. It's easy scaling, so you don't have to worry about adding a server and having it just suck up everything in clustering time. So self-tuning memory management is supported, right? So what would actually happen is it'll tune by server, so it's not across the entire thing. It'll actually look at it with each database and do the tuning that way. So it is supported. So one other question around virtual IP. So is the IP load balancing? What actually happens is picture a client coming in, you catalog that database under an IP, and then it connects in, and DB2 client will actually do the load balancing. So the virtual IP just points to one server, and then it spans across all of them. So if one of them goes down, it gets routed over, but otherwise all the load balancing is done by the DB2 client. It is similar to round robin, but if they're all sort of balanced, it would do a round robin, but it's also weighted. So if server A or server 1 is much heavier used than server 2, it'll use the one that's least heavily used. But if they're all pretty close, then they'll just do a round robin. We're looking at adding different algorithms into this and some more pools of workloads. But right now, being able to hide the complexity is actually kind of nice. Everyone says, hey, I'd like to balance it out. I'd like to have some workload on 1 and 2, some workload on 3 and 4. The reality is, if you didn't have to do data locality work, you wouldn't do this. Right? Like, I mean, if you could just say, I don't care where it's going to run, I just want to treat it like a database, most of the time, they wouldn't care which database you're connecting to. The reason why a lot of Oracle people like it is because they have to for data locality, right? Because they didn't ever have to worry about that. They can have the data anywhere and the workload anywhere. They don't really care. So I think that's the big thing. Mariano asked a good question. We covered at the front, but I'll bring it up now again. It is only IBM hardware. It's System X, Linux, Red Hat, and SUSE, right? So it's Red Hat right now, but we'll have Red Hat and SLES in the fall, and on System X. So it's only IBM hardware for now, and that's because we've done a lot of optimization work with the team on this. So Hood asked, what about different buffer pool sizes, right? So you can definitely have different sizes of memory, different buffer pools the whole bit, right? And the workload balancing is based on how heavily utilized that database is. So it can definitely be different. And I kind of feel like the Old Spice guy, right, with so-and-so asked, but I don't have the flashy video along with it. So, yeah, definitely different sizes is fine. We recommend the balance, but having it spread across different sizes is fine, no problem. So I'm going to head on, and then we'll come back to the questions in just a few minutes. But first, one from Anil. Anil's active in the IDEC community over in India. So, Anil, keep up the great work. One of the things we have is there is IP Heartbeat. All the Heartbeat technology is woven within DB2 and Tivoli right within it. You don't need to worry about it. It'll take care of itself. And even one of the big things, and the reason why we're specific with storage, is that you can say, let's say server 3 gets cut off, right? But it's not actually cut off. It's a network error. What that SCSI 3 PR support will do, it'll actually say, nope, we've been told you're not part of the cluster, and it's going to cut off read-writes from that server until it gets reintegrated, right? Because you don't want split brain. You don't want server 3 having network problems so it can't communicate, so it can't stay in sync, but still reading and writing out to the shared disk, because then you get data corruption, you get things messed up. So what that protocol actually does, it allows us very rapidly to cut off a server and also reintegrate it, so you don't get a split brain. What we also have across here is obviously we need a clustered file system, right, for this, because we've got a clustered system, and GPFS handles this. Right, so it's general parallel file system. This runs on Linux and AIX, and this is actually already offered through IBM, and we've got that fully integrated into it. Now, here's a caveat, and it's actually, there's the full definition, SCSI 3 persistent reserve, right? So I don't keep on using the short form. Now, I'm going to be up front. If you're moving to GPFS, you will have to move your data over from the existing file system over onto the GPFS file system. We've got a lot of docs on how to do this. But that's probably the big struggle. It's not just like a fixed back upgrade like the rest of DB2. You need to get your data over. If you're already on GPFS, then it's easy, right? It's an upgrade. We've got it. We've got all scripted. But if you're not on GPFS yet, you have to have that database created on it and the data moved over to be on GPFS. So Gopal asks, is there a GUI front tool? Yep. Optum Performance Manager, which is new, has full support for PureScale, and you can use it for GUI performance management. I'm a big fan of the command line, but they've done a lot of work with Optum Performance Manager for tuning. It's a big step up from performance experts, so I highly encourage taking a look at it. Alex asks, is there multiple copies of the log like ZOS? Right now we just have one. So each member has its own log, which is on shared disk. We don't have multiple copies unless you're actually, like archiving, and then that's fine. So David asks, is Tivoli a necessary component? It is. But it's fully woven in. You don't even know it's there. Even in the install, you never even see Tivoli mentioned, right? It's all taken care of, all hidden, fixed packs, the whole bit. So it's just like it is for a regular DB2 install. Got a couple more slides. We want to have lots of times for oral Q&A, so So I'm sure some of you will stump me on some of this too. So I'm just going to go through this a little bit more, and then we'll come back to the Q&A in a second. So for cluster services, it's really to make sure that if something happens, that it recovers very quickly. And this is the great story where that DBA sat in the back room continuing to kill a DB2 PureScale cluster and watch it pop back up. And we didn't realize why our logs were blowing up in size, so we realized you just kept on doing that kill minus 9. Does a very good job of coming back up, right, either from hardware failures or if you're killing DB2, and it's designed to come up without intervention, right? And it's a variety of technologies for this, but it's all shipped and integrated into it. Now, for planned events, this is a nice one. You can cleanly bring a member down. Let's say you're in a two-member system like this, member 0, member 1. You could do a DB2 stop and do a quiesce. So you push the connections off. All the workload balancing would then go to member 0. You apply the OS upgrades or whatever you need to do, or a server, or even replace the server, right, do a complete server upgrade, and then just DB2 start brings it back into the cluster. Now, the recovery is pretty quick. So if you want to add capacity, say add member 2, and you've already got DB2 PureScale pre-installed, it's just a DB2 start. So what some customers are looking at doing is having it pre-installed, really having the LPAR shut down, and then just add capacity and increase the LPAR when they need it for those peak periods. You could do that, right? Right now, the IPs for this need to be specified ahead of time in the nodes.cfg file. We're going to be adding it so you can dynamically add any node you want, or any, sorry, member, old terminology, my bad, add any member you want later on. So you would need to have the IP written down ahead of time. So a couple questions. I'll pause here. Mariano asks, are Unix raw devices allowed? I believe RAW is not supported right now. If Paul Awad is on, just reply back and let me know. But, yeah, I don't think RAW is supported. We went away from RAW. So is a full backup requires that all members be up for recovery? No. It's shared disk, so you could even have just one member up, right? You don't need all the members up. And the admin task will run in any particular member whatsoever. So maybe member 3 would get hit more CPU admin-wise with the min, but then it would get routed somewhere else. So, and Pablo asked, before it scrolls by the screen, I'll grab your question, Pablo. Minimum number of active members is 1? Yeah, you need at least one member up. If you're down to 0, you got problems. But the minimum number is 1. It's not 2. You can be down to a single member. Hope for your sake, it's planned versus unplanned if you're down to a single member. But for active, you could have one of those two members fail and you'd be fine. So Bill's got a couple questions I'll come back to. So Bill, when we get to Q&A, just sort of loop back around, right? So Karen asked, for DB2 maintenance, can they do it on individual LPARs? Sure, yeah, 100%. You can actually run it on individual ones, but it's shared disk, so remember it impacts everyone. So I'm going to get through the next couple of slides, guys, and then I'll come back to the questions. So hold off for a few minutes on them, and we'll come back. So PureScale application system, someone asked about this earlier, and I don't think it was an IBM plant, so thank you for reading the marketing on this. What we've done is work with Power and the Power 770 to have an appliance offering for this. So all pre-configured, pre-installed. But there's actually some kind of neat things here where you can actually scale up the Power 770 by just adding additional sort of buckets of CPU, right? You can add additional servers, have them strung together, expand up the number of cores there up to 64. And I think the slides are a little off. The animation didn't quite come through here. There we go. Scale out. You can scroll up to, or scale out, sorry, to about 128 members. That's huge, right? Even 2 members with a Power 770 is pretty big. 64 cores times 2 is biggest OLTP server I've ever dealt with. So these are big boxes you can do it with. But the nice thing is, if I go back a slide, and I'm on slide 21, you could start that Power 770 with 4 cores. It doesn't have to be a big box. You can start with 2 servers and only 4 cores, and use something called capacity on demand to just activate cores as you go. So this doesn't have to be huge, like Oracle Exadata. It can start quite small to exactly what you need. You can actually scale up just by adding cores, so you don't even need to add more servers to the cluster. You could just add the cores that are sitting there, unactivate on the box, and just pay for software as you add them. So it's a really neat way to scale up without having to pay a boatload up front. So scale out. Obviously, you can scale it quite easily and try the beta. I think you'd be quite surprised how easy it is to add additional servers here. And the next one, I'm on slide 23, scale within. And this is the capacity on demand where the idea you could just add additional cores, activate them, they're sitting in the box, and get going quickly. So a couple ways you can scale it on this. Starts very, very small and then can scale up based on what you need. Now, we're in slide 24, and this is of a lot of interest to a number of you. I received a lot of emails in the last couple of weeks on this. And I'm glad Anil found his answer, which is good. And so hopefully not telepathy. You'll be a rich man if you do have it, but the answer is up there. So with PureScale and SystemX, we support a number of servers, and this is because we're really what we've tested right now. We're going to support anything that runs InfiniBand, RDMA, and later Gigi, right? That's the reality. From Blades to whatever, we'll be testing this to get support out there. These are the ones we've officially tested and gone through all the work on, and there's specific adapters that we have requirements on because of how we use RDMA, and that's so we can get really, really good performance. We've done a lot of work with clients running Linux and some neat stuff with deploying a whole bunch of mini clusters, right, and just add capacity as you need it. Because things have changed, guys. Like, a 1U blade, right, with an octi-core chip is 8 cores. That used to be a giant power server, a giant Linux box, right? And if you can slap 64 gigs of RAM in a blade and 8 cores, you can add a lot of capacity quickly with blades. So we are looking at being able to be flexible on adding whatever systems you want as long as they're from IBM. So Gopal asked, what's the maximum members on PureScale? It's actually 128, right, which is huge. Linux, we've tested up to 10, but 10 times, let's say, a four-way at 32 cores, which is a reality for even a small four-way Intel machine, that's 320 cores in the cluster. Right? Even with clustering overhead, which isn't huge, that's bigger than any OLTP box I've ever heard of. Right? So this thing can scale as far as you need. Now, question from Ian. Apart from redundancy, before you need to scale for any reason before maxing out the individual number of servers, let me read that. Would you need to scale it for any reason before? I honestly think what a lot of people are going to do on power is use dynamic L-parring to increase the number of cores on those servers, and as they need big increases or growth over time, they'll add more servers. So they'll do a combination of increasing the L-pars and also increasing the number of servers, right? Workload management from Gopal's question is actually separate from this. It's coming up later, so it's not integrated right now. There's a lot of work to get the CPU sharing across multiple servers set up, so that's not there at all. For the shared disks from Sam's comment, are only there for the database files, and the instant home also needs to be shared. Everything needs to be shared for recovery purposes, heartbeat, and the whole bit. So the instance home would actually be sitting on that GPFS system, similar to how we do that a lot with DPF, right? So Danyan said, could you post justification benchmark test to port heavy-duty OLTP with range partition implemented and move to PureScale? We don't have range partitioning yet on this. And for the benchmarks, what we're doing, we published a massive TPCC just a couple of weeks ago, right, 2 weeks ago at 10.3, right, which is huge. What we're doing instead of these giant benchmarks, where that's like 10 Walmarts, right? They've gotten so large that they're pretty unrealistic, both from Oracle and us, but we want to show we're number one and can beat their pants off, which we did, a lot less cores and a lot less energy. What we're doing instead is we're doing workload with individual customers. So a lot of the telco systems, we've looked at how do you quickly scale up your systems with small servers, as well as financial services, how to do or work with SAP. We're doing that with individual customers rather than benchmarks, because frankly, customers don't trust it until it's in their own servers, in their own environment, versus some jerry-rigged corporate benchmark. So if you do have interest in doing this, reach out to the local IBM team. We're happy to work with you either on Power and X, and we'll come prove it to you, and even have work with you to live demos where you can kill the box and add capacity as you need. So going that way, trying to avoid the benchmarks, because frankly, we've got the scaling numbers. We did do a proof point out to 128 members. This is across a large number of Power 770s. With even at 128, it was, I think, 81% scaling. The lower end is about 95% scaling. So this thing will go as far as you want. Have us come in. We'll prove it to you and show you how to work on your real workload. So for the benchmarks, on the DB2 chat with the labs, I think there was slides on that scalability one is there. But for the public benchmarks, we're not doing them. We're working heavily with clients and showing them how this can work, either versus Exadata, RAC, obviously, or Sybase, and we'll work with the customer on site on this. And it's actually worked out quite well that way, and people do believe it. And Patricia asked, no range partitioning? Not right now. It's coming soon, but it wasn't in the initial release of PureScale. So operating systems for Linux, and we'll turn over to questions pretty soon. It's Novell, SUSE Service Pack 10, and then SLES 11 and Red Hat 5 to follow in Q4. One thing I'm interested in, and you can send me emails on this, is how quickly you're adapting Red Hat 6, right? I know it's coming out soon. What's your plans on moving? We're trying to decide when to support Red Hat 6 with this. And is it too bleeding edge, or is there key things you're looking for and you're going to adapt it soon? See if your company is looking to move towards it. Let us know, and we'll prioritize based on customer feedback. So question as well, and Gopal has been very active, so thanks for keeping me on my toes. What's the maximum memory needed for PureScale, or minimum and maximum? Minimum we're looking at is about 32 gigs, right? Standard large OLTP database. I'm not sure if there's a legal minimum. Like, you know, a system requirement is probably 16 gigs for the minimum. Same with the PowerHA servers. Maximum, the new Power795 can support 8 terabytes of memory. It's a pretty good maximum in my mind, right? Like, it'll scale up as far as you can go, and you're good to go. Now, Mariano asked, what about SAP? That'll be coming up soon. We're working with them on a partnership statement, but they've been a great partner on this for a while. There's been teaser announcements so far, but look for an official announcement from SAP around the official support for this. But they've been an excellent partner on it. A quick question from Jay. Question on other hardware, that's still up in the air, Jay. So we're working with other vendors. We did do a lot of work and continue to work with Optimize and STG, our hardware group. So right now it's only that, and looking at 2011 is that way too. So, and Sled's tenant, any Intel service, that is, it's only System X for now. And that's because the optimization work and also the capacity on demand, which will save you a boatload in license cost, and that's only IBM hardware we have that working on right now. So next slide, and we'll come back to the questions before Rav says, hey, we should have been done already. So minimum configuration, this is key, pair of machines, right, with at least one socket. That's all you need because we can pin the cores. If you want to have a more complex environment with dedicated PowerHA servers, you know, a whole bunch of servers, that's fine. We support it. But to be really clear, the minimum is 2, which is how a lot of people use this, right? So we can pin it otherwise. Recommended would be more, right? Little servers strung out into a larger cluster, just like you would with rack, but you can definitely do active-active on this, right? So capacity on demand is System X, confirmed with software group pricing last week. So it's System X and Power, which means you can do that daily licensing, which honestly you tell your manager or your CIO or director about this, and just draw a picture of here's your spike at 80%, here's the rest of your at 8% or 8% utilization. Fill in the gaps of the licensing saving on software, you've cut yourself a pretty big bonus. And that's why people are interested, because it can save you a lot in software. So it's only, good question from Tom, what about the CS or the PowerHA servers or clustering facility? You get a lot of different terms kicking around on this. It only supports 2 right now, so active-active. We're looking at partitioning them. We've done the work. But right now we don't have the customer demand to have it scale it for multiple CS. Most of this is memory-driven. We should be good. Like, we found it's been able to handle anything we've been able to throw at it so far from a customer perspective. So, next slide. So that's the thank you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open it up to questions at this point. A couple things first before we, and I think you guys have actually been excellent. I've tried to make it a lot more interactive rather than have you wait to the end. There's a website here, db2/purescale. It's not just a marketing website. Right, there's actually good demos, there's live material, there's white papers. We're trying to change the IBM web pages to just marketing material, to something you'll find useful information. iDug.org is a great place to go for information. Even better, Channel DB2, a lot of the Express sites that Rav and team run and the other DB2 community sites they've been running are really good place for information. So check out the videos on Channel DB2. There's links to a number of them from the PureScale site. But I think you'll find a lot of good demos here for this. Big plug before I fully open this up to oral questions is really try the beta, right? I think you'd be surprised. It's easy for me to say it's a single command, right? When I was directly involved in running databases, I would have scoffed at that and laughed. When I was at the Power event a week ago, I was actually upset when the internet went down because I was going to have to, and this is in front of 100 people, I was going to have to record a demo and I wanted to do it live. I wanted to kill a server live. I wanted to add a server live. This is running on Power. The same goes for X. I now prefer doing this completely live, having people tell me when they want it killed or multiple server killed before we recover them all. I think you'd be pretty surprised in how well this works. There are limitations, right? There are in any technology. But we're getting through them very quickly, and thanks to everything we leveraged with Sysplex, with not brand-new technology. This is something that's had the tar beaten out of it for decades, and we've been able to learn from that versus starting from scratch. So I think you'll find it'll do a much better job than you would have thought of new technology. But bear with us if you come into limitations like range partitioning, which Paul Awad and I, and Paul's the product manager who owns PureScale, and Paul works for me, we want to hear from you. So if you say, hey, you guys are bonkers, we're not supporting non-System X, right? Or when is range partitioning coming, or blah, let us know. Our views are a tenth of, or a hundredth of value of yours. You've got to let us know. So use the community pages, work with Rav, work with others, work with Paul. Let us know what's missing, how we can improve it. You'll find we respond very quickly. Like XML is coming in the fall, multi-database support, so you can do a lot of that a lot of the consolidation work earlier, but that's based on feedback from customers in the community. So reach out to us. Product manager is always willing to hear from you. And just make sure it's clear in your subject line what it's about. We all receive a lot of email. I don't want to miss this stuff from you guys. So final question, David Baker, and then I'll open it up to the Lions. Do you have a live System X demo? We do. So if you're interested, reach out to your IBM rep, and we can come do it live. Most of our demos are on Power, just because that's where demo infrastructure is. But we can definitely do them on System X 2, and I think we actually just got a whole slew of machines up in Toronto. So rather than running on Power, we can run on System X, no problem. So I'm going to ask the operator to open up the lines for Q&A, or however it feels best to handle. We're not going to be doing polling today, but we will do Q&A for about 15 minutes, and we've got a hard stop at 1 Eastern. So, operator?
If you would like to ask a question over your phone, you may press star 1. Be sure your phone is not muted and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw that request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone.
So one quick question quickly from Gopal. When the instance starts on PureScale, how much memory is allocated, 80 or 90%? I'm actually not sure about that one. So shoot me a note, and we'll find out for you, because I know there's – right now I thought it was 100%, but I remember seeing an email on something different. So especially if you're using self-tuning, we'll find out for you, right? So shoot me an email. My email's up here. No spam, please. So don't sign me up for any less. But happy to respond to you. I'm on vacation for another week or so. For those of you looking for tech questions or want to hear more about PureScale, there's an additional person, Paul Awad, and it's PR. I'm going to give everyone his email address, so Paul, bear with me. PRAWAD@ca.ibm.com. Reach out to Paul. He's the best guy to contact on this. I'm always available too, but I'm on vacation for a while. So if you want to hear about PureScale earlier, go through Paul. So with that, I'm going to turn back to the operator.
At this time, there are no questions.
No. I was ready for the stump the presenter here. So let me go back and see which ones I missed. And I want to thank all of you for your time on this too. So last question, I'll start from the bottom up. Bill Gallagher asked actually a really good question. So between PureScale, HADR, DPF, Veritas Cluster Services, we've got a lot of options for high availability and high performance. So guidelines. Okay, the way I look at it, I always draw a simple chart. When the business comes to any of my customers or partners and said, I can never afford to be down, I want 5 nines, right? It's always a chart of availability versus cost, with cost being the y-axis and availability being the x-axis. The more availability and exponentially as you go towards more nines, right, the cost goes up exponentially. So think about what the business really needs and say, how much downtime can you have? And they're going to say none. And then say, are you willing to pay $1 million for 5 minutes of downtime? And they go, no. So you got to look at what's important. HADR still does a really good job for simple availability that's good for almost everything you need. And it's got fixed pack rolling upgrades too, and read on standby now as well. And it's cheap. It's easy, right? But you don't get full utilization over the second server. Right, for DR, you can use queue replication and change data capture in the fall as well with PureScale, so we do have a DR option. But everything costs money. So work through your business in terms of what they really need, because I'll always say 5 nines. That's because marketing has trained them that way. We will have sessions at IOD in the fall, and they'll be available in IDUG, their conference in Europe and in North America, and I think online, too, some really good HA presentations from Dale McInnes. But look for some great content that we'll make sure is up on DB2, or channel DB2 in the fall on HA solutions, so an end-to-end story. So, Bill, I'm dodging the question exactly because we don't have the charts built yet, but I know at IOD we're going to be building up what your options are, cost, and why you choose one versus the other. Mostly it comes to cost, right? So Robert asked a question, are multiple instances going to be supported? Yes, that'll be in the spring. We're hoping to get in the fall, but we will have multi-DB and then multi-instance in the spring with the next fix pack. So Phil Gunning asked, is it range or table partitioning? It's range partitioning. That's not currently supported. That will be coming. And so we will be supporting it any time now. It's going to be a little bit, but it's coming for sure. Now, Michael Schultz asks, and Michael, I don't believe, works for IBM, so I got to say he's not a plant. This is a fair question from the audience I can answer. He says, you mentioned RAC multiple times. What are your top 3 points of differentiation versus RAC? Number one, ours is easy. RAC, a lot of things, right? It's not bad software. I always have to admit that, right? They've had years to get it better. It's not easy, right? Even 11G R2, it's not, you wouldn't say RAC and easy in the same sentence, right, or scaling and easy. So I think ease of install is number one. Ease of scaling, right? One command to add the additional or do the install and one command to add and start the service, that's not RAC, right? So the options you have for adding and removing them is a huge differentiation. Number three, I'm going to use 2 words, so cost savings. This is the idea of being able to do daily pricing. You can't do it at RAC. They've sold you the way Oracle is going, and it's a strategy is to sell a large amount of capacity, similar to what they do with Exadata. We want you instead just have the capacity you need. Use a workload-optimized system, the IBM PureSQL application system, and if you contrast that versus Exadata, ours is start small, grow as you need it, and then scale back as you need it, versus Oracle, buy a boatload, and then we'll find ways to charge you support later. So that's my one marketing ease I've woven into this. But Mitchell, sorry, I said Michael, but Mitchell asked it. So thanks for the question, Mitchell. So Ira asked a question I missed before, so thanks, Ira. Is intermember read interest tracked? I don't think it is. I don't think the amount of going back and forth is. The reason why, and I'm almost positive it isn't, is because RDMA, the whole reason we used it is because we don't want to ever track it. We don't want the overhead. We don't want the CPU. So we don't do that. Plus, it's all global. The amount of times it goes out to the global lock manager between members wouldn't be tracked, but I think the hit ratio would be. I'm pretty sure we added additional stats. So you can see just like a buffer pool hit ratio, you can see the global buffer pool hit ratio to figure out how much well is it actually in another member. So I think those stats are there. I don't know the command at the top of my head, but if you check the info center, it would definitely have the new stats that are there. So Tim Muldoon asked about daily pricing. So the way it works is you would actually count the number of cores, right, or the number of PVUs you have, so 100 PVUs on the server, and just pay for the amount of capacity you have for that day that you've got it on. So let's say you added server 3, start it up, you just pay for DB2 for the days you had it on, and then you, as you stop that member, you just pay for those days, that's it. So you wouldn't have to pay for 365, you just pay for the few days it's running, and this is really going to only be used for peak. Right, it isn't going to be used all the time. You're not going to add a server here and on Tuesday remove it. That's too much heartache, and you can picture going through your IT approval boards, no matter how big the company is, and people tell you you're nuts. But planning for a big event, that's a big difference. 3 days a peak where you only use the server for 3 days, roll one of those servers over from test, right? Turn the test guys off for 3 days, so you're not even buying a new server. Turn DB2 on, let your IBM contact know, hey, we're going to use 3 days of capacity either before or afterwards, and that's when it is. It's not monitoring usage. This is actually for our key customers, and it's based on the honor system, right? So we don't have draconian agents running there watching all the time. It's really honor system for your key events. Just work with IBM, right? The existing servers, using whatever virtualization tracking systems, that will monitor it. But daily stuff we can't track, nor do I want to. I want to make sure this is flexible, and then you can go forward. Now, Mika asks, do you still pay for the hardware? Yeah, the hardware isn't daily pricing. Once you got in the loading dock in your lab, you're paying for it, right? This is only the software side of this. Daily pricing, James, good seeing you on the call. is daily pricing available without PureScale? It is, but we don't see it commonly used. So the actual term, and IBM's good at making horrible terms, is capacity on, off, on demand, COOOD. It's there. It has been for years. Not a lot of people use it because they don't tend to increase an LPAR temporarily with ESC and turn it off for peak. So you could use it, but we see a lot more people with interest on PureScale where they can add an exact server. They know when they're adding it and why, but you could use it for DB2 Enterprise right now. So chargeback, yeah, that's the number one thing. People say, yeah, it's kind of neat, but the chargeback, good luck with that. So I can't solve your procurement problems. I'm just giving you an option. So good question from Ira around what changes, if any, were done to support optimization profiling. There is work there, so you can tell where how it's being spread out, and there's PureScale Aware. So when you look at Visual Explain, there's some additional information there. So we've tried to make it as aware as possible. Same with Optim Performance Manager. It's easier to tune. But remember, at the end of the day, the query runs on one server, right? It isn't a data partitioning feature, so shared nothing with Infrastructure Warehouse. You've got queries running across many. PureScale always just runs on one server, right? So that's really the optimization and tuning. You should treat it just like one database. Don't worry about if there's one server in the cluster or eight, because it's only going to run locally on one. It's not spread across multiple ones. Another question, do you have customers that are currently using this PureScale technology? We do. We've actually got a number of our large customers on it. You'll hear more about them at IOD in the fall. So the reason they went there, big thing is license savings. And second thing, and two, I forget who asked the question, it's HA. They need a system active-active where they've got big boxes where they didn't want to waste the second box. They wanted something they can trust, and they know how good Sysplex was, so they want that for their distributed systems. So we definitely have customers doing this, and then they want to be able to scale without having to buy identical servers, right? So we do have customers on this, and they've moved because of cost savings. Ironically, buy software to save money, but they saw the reasons for this, and we've got a lot of them in the wings as well around SAP. So Tom asks, it appears you could create an in-memory database grid versus using SolidDB. Actually, we're looking at how to join them up, because Solid is very, very quick. SolidDB, for those who don't know, it's our in-memory database, 10 times performance you can get. Because it's all in memory, it's very, very quick. And with SolidDB Universal Cache, it ties directly into the back end. And so you could have this sit on top of PureScale. We're looking at how do we have a best practice here. But you could have a huge performance boost up front, feed into PureScale for additional work. We're looking at how to optimize that better. So you could build a grid. I think Jamie Waters, my product manager for Solid, is on the webcast, so Jamie, remember that and follow up when I get back from vacation. So does IBM employ PureScale internally? Not yet, but for those of you on Same Time, we're looking at adding this for Same Time, because Same Time for us is our IM system worldwide, which I shut down before this call because otherwise there would be too many pings. We are looking at adding that as well. WebSphere Commerce supports it. WebSphere does. So a lot of the infrastructure now we've got support internally. We will be looking at adding PureScale just so they can add capacity on demand, similar to what our customers would want to do, but we had to get the product certified first, so we're looking at adding to that. John McVickers asked, anyone using PureScale to host a migrated Oracle app using the Oracle compatibility mode? Not yet. The reason why is a lot of our customers are just doing straight Oracle migrations, the ones already running on RAC. They've got them working. They may be a tad fragile, but they don't want to move those ones because they're the most critical ones. So we don't need direct references from RAC straight to DB2. But we've got customers looking at it, a couple of big telcos, but because they're looking at scalability limits with RAC, but we don't have any live ones yet. So a lot of POCs in flight right now, good ones, and that will change in Q4, but I don't have the public references for the RAC migrations. Oracle stuff, sure, it's huge, and all the Oracle compatibility sits in PureScale right now, so whatever you can do with 9.7 will be within PureScale. So Roberto asked, I said, is there someone? I can't ask that one. There is someone for you, Roberto, but I may have missed the question a little bit earlier. So there's someone out there for you, but send me another note, okay, and we'll get you the answer for that. So going back up to see which ones I missed, and we're going to wrap in about a minute, so get your final questions in now. Yajesh asks, for self-tuning memory management, when the connection is pointed at a different cluster, will it again waste time tuning the DB parameters? No, it's done individually for each cluster, so it's not going to retune it. It's on a cluster-by-cluster basis. I'll have Paul keep me honest, and if I'm incorrect on that, Paul, just ping a response up there. So, I believe it's done in a database-by-database setup. So if you add a server, it's going to tune it based on how much memory is assigned to that new server member sitting in the cluster. And finally, questions here. So Roberto wanted to know, actually I'll go back to Paul's, I missed it earlier. PureScale Appliance, there's links off the PureScale webpage on this, so definitely take a look. You can, right now it's not a single part, so you can buy your power servers, buy your software separately and get going. We'll provide services to get all working, but there's a lot of best practice out there. And so it is available right now on Power. Now for getting this presentation, I'm actually going to wrap on that just to keep within time. How do you download the presentation? I am going to go back to the very beginning. I think I have a slide at the top. Yep. So if you look, ibm.com/db2/labchat, so you can get the presentation there. As well, Rav is kind enough to upload some of the demos that we spoke about today, so take a look. They're not jerry-rigged, except for cutting the install times. You're not staring at the same screen for 10 minutes. Everything else is live, which is pretty neat. And the commands being executed for recovery, for starting and stopping, is DB2 start and DB2 stop. Everything else is handled automatically. The client rewriting the whole bit, so what you see is what you get. So with that, I'm going to wrap up. And Rav, I believe you're on the line, so if you can close us out. And I wanted to thank you again for organizing this. And more importantly, thank all of you for taking the time either to listen in after the fact or taking the time on a Tuesday afternoon to listen to me today. So with that, Rav, back to you.
Today's conference has concluded. You may disconnect your phones at this time. Thank you for participating in today's conference call.